G'day guys, welcome back to another special episode of Motorsport Republica with Chris Vermeulen. Thanks for coming back on, mate.
Yeah, no, good to see you guys. We see you around in the paddock. It's and I see what you guys are doing. It's great to see, and we can catch up again. So very good.
It's always unreal.
It's really good. It's we're back down again for round five of the ASPK at the island, and it's not pissing down rain, so it's really nice.
We just missed it, I think, just before as those little cars came on. So fingers crossed.
It was sort of, yeah, there was a few bits of rain there before. Sorry. Yeah. And but yeah, September at Phillip Island, you don't know what you're gonna get, right? We had fantastic weather today. But
yeah, it was real lucky. I mean, you never know what you're gonna get any time of year.
The MotoGP, right? It can be very average, let's face it.
Well, MotoGP last year was as bad as it was ever going to get. And then we were back down the week after for
Aussie Supers.
And it was pristine. Primo.
I know, and that's the thing with this place. I've been down here. I did some filming with Casey Stoner and we did a ride lap in August 1 year and it was perfect. Mm. It was like 15 degrees, no wind, pure sun. We're riding Triumph Tigers, so it wasn't much fun for that.
Oh, but, I've seen that video.
But we were like, oh, imagine if we had a good bike. This is like primo Phillip Island, but yeah, it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, no, not at all. Fingers crossed it holds out tomorrow, but so we can get some good racing.
Exactly.
So. I obviously missed a lot of today, but who's looking fast?
Josh Waters. He's a Phillip Island specialist. I shouldn't say that. He's fast in a lot of places. The Ducati works well. Josh knows how to get a lap time out of this place. Crew Halliday was second fastest on the Yamaha.
Lightning today, wasn't he?
Yeah, very, very good lap times. And Harrison Voigt.
Yeah, good to see him back as well.
You know, he's either just turned 18 or just about to turn 18. He's a young fella. Doing great things in Europe and really cool that he's got the time to come and do some of these races. And he's very fast on that thing. So
yeah, he looks really good. Even it's just great for the sport to have all these young guys, you know, Maxi Stauffer, Cam Dunker.
Yep,
exactly. Yeah, it's really good seeing him in there.
Yep, yeah, exactly. And even Brock Pearson, a little bit older, but still someone that's, still come through and is still a younger bloke, you know, so doing well.
On those leader bikes doing like when they're 16, 17, 18, it's crazy. Like I can't imagine doing that as a 29-year-old, but like racing around in anger for a 16-year-old. That's after the maturity on your head though to kind of know where the limit is and to find it and not get that such white line fever at the same time.
Yeah. 100%.
It's amazing.
I rode an R1 at 16. I did the Australian Superbike Championship at a production. I rode an R1 that year basically. But an R1 then had 150 horsepower, not 200 horsepower. Yeah, so everything is very, very different. And the speed's higher. And it was a big deal when I did it. But it's a bigger deal now. But saying that the kids are starting racing at a younger age, I did no racing and then got straight on an R1, you know. Yeah. So it's good that we've got those classes that allows them to come through, 100%. You know, those Avale classes and then the R1 Cup or Oceanic Junior Cup, whatever it is, and the 300 class, and they can start from sort of 9-10 years old. So it's really good because my day, the old day, sound old now. back in my day, you had to be 16 to start road racing. So
yeah, there you go. Yeah. No, times have definitely changed.
And that would have been a lot of flat track you would have done before that and motocross and everything like that.
Yeah, I did a bit of motocross and a bit of flat track and worked out that I enjoyed speed over height. Though I only got about that high, right? But it scared the hell out of me. So I'll stick to something that goes fast. Yep.
No, I like it. It was interesting. When we did our pod with Mike Jones, I guess every road racer we talked to were like, you know, what's your background and what you do? And we kind of just assumed he did flat track, didn't we?
Yeah, that's right.
He didn't do any of it,
exactly.
Did he?
No. Yeah, it was really interesting to get his take. It was just always all road.
Yes. And in his style, you can see that, right? He's very much in line compared to someone like a Pearson or Troy Bayliss. Let's face it, he loves his flat track, but you can see that in his style. So it is very different. And there's no right and wrong way. It's just what you develop and how you progress as a rider, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Even I think he's the only one that we've spoken to that's
only come from
that. It's pretty rare. Especially as an Aussie my year or earlier that was Aussies and Yanks dominated, right? Yeah, and we came from flat track because the bikes had no electronics, so you could control and manage a slide. It didn't affect you. And the Europeans caught on to that a bit later. And the good Europeans, early guys, Spanish, they used to do a lot of training at Kenny Roberts' ranch to learn that flat track style. And obviously the Spanish are dominating now, but they take every aspect. They don't just do that. They ride mini bikes on the bitumen. Yeah. They ride flat track. They ride motocross. It's all little things that you can take and use the advantage.
Yeah, and put it into play. Guys, we've got a fantastic offer coming to you for this month and this month only. 15% off Pirelli tyres at motoheaven.com.au. Now, our friends are running this awesome deal on the Supercorsa V4s, the Rosso Corsa 4, the Rosso 4, and the Angel GT2. Wild, because Pirelli barely goes on sale. And to get 15% off is mind-boggling, in all honesty. Huge. It's crazy.
It is. Guys, you never pay full price at Motor Heaven.
That's the best.
All orders over $100, free shipping. Amazing.
It is. It's great. And they literally have the best website in the country. It's so easy to use. They're unbiased. You can get any brand you want. They'll send it out. It is amazing. They've got parts finders, tyre finders. Go to motoheaven.com.au. You can grab whatever you want. Shoei helmets, AGVs, Dine Easy, Alpine Stars. They literally have it up. Chains, sprockets, whatever you want for your bike, KX250, R1, motorheaven.com.au.
Best in the business,
best
guys.
In the business.
We love it.
Business. We love it.
Awesome. I mean, I guess we're seeing that with VR46 Academy, right?
Like 100%.
He's got the ranch, he's got the Lido Valleys as well, and they're training Misano all the time.
Aspar's got a place too in Spain. Yep. And Marquez was there with David Alonso recently. And
that's a pairing to like,
isn't it? That kid is good, and then you're going to get help from
him.
One of the greatest. Like, this is going to be it's pretty special, I reckon. Yeah, looking forward. So, and Pedro Acosta, what he can do on some of that stuff. I spoke to Jack Miller a couple of years ago when Pedro was strong in, I call him 125s all the time.
Moto 3.
And Jack said, yeah, I was out, we were riding Navales, and I just got a riding lesson off Pedro. Like, he just showed me how to get around a track. You know, that's how good and developed they are at such a young age. You know,
that's crazy. Did you see any footage or photos of him testing that Moto 2?
I did see just a quick clip, but it's interesting, isn't it, that KTM still want him to do stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
On that's crazy.
So, and that's very different to a MotoGP bike, right? No electronics.
No.
Very different engine and chassis, tyre. Interesting that they're doing that. It doesn't affect him. He can just go from one to the other. Because some guys changing motorcycles like that really
messes with you.
Yeah, it takes a little bit to get the most out of it. Yeah, not him.
No, not at all. And he looked a lot better on it coming off the GP bike than what he did on it last year. He was hanging off it like a spider monkey. It was crazy. Yeah.
It's easier. Generally, it's easier to go backwards
of course,
in class.
Yeah.
It's harder to step up. But, it's cool. It's cool. And he just loves riding motorbikes.
Oh, absolutely. Clearly, he's a character, man. Yeah.
I like him a lot. And he's well-respected in the paddock. Everyone says he just walks around the media center. He's there. He's available for everyone. He's just a cool guy.
That's so unreal.
Yeah. And
What do you think of his first season in GPs anyway? How have you made of that?
Look, there was a lot of hype coming in, and it's difficult to live up to that hype, especially with what someone like Mark did, you know, when he came in and then was champion straight up. But it's a different time.
Yeah.
And Mark came in on a bike that could win the championship.
Yeah, that's right.
Pedro has come in on a bike that, let's face it, it's probably not going to win the championship. Even with a Pecco Bagnaia on it or a Martin, it's not going to win the championship, right? So I think he's done a really good job. They're not easy to get your head around working at 350 kilometers an hour. And I think he's done a great job with limited testing. And he's leading KTM or whatever they.
Yeah, I think he is. Is he?
Yeah, he would be.
I think he would have. Yeah. Well, let's face. And last time out, Binder was right behind him. And at the end of the race at Aragon, he rode away from him for a couple of seconds.
Yep.
Brad's got a lot more experience than him. And
That's true. And
Brad Binder's not a slow rider.
So, no, absolutely not.
You know, I'm very impressed. I think it's a great rookie season. The hype probably makes it sound not as good as it could have been.
Of course.
But I think it's a great rookie season. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he started super strong.
Yeah.
And then sort of, I think as people might have expected, sort of plateaued a little bit and then just sort of leveled out. And then now he's sort of come back and hit it hard. Yeah, he's coming up to a couple of tracks that he likes.
Yep.
The flyaways, as you know, they throw up weird and wacky results
and
all the time.
And MotoGP is difficult at the moment with learning the technology.
That's
and the how do you get the most out of the front tire. And some of those bad races, let's face it, it could have been a high front tire pressure or, you know, not everything comes out. Or there could have been bike issues.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
How many times have we heard ride height devices not disengaging? Yeah. Or Marquez's one where he couldn't engage it. And it just ruins, you know, there's things like that. And we don't know what's going on everywhere. But yeah, no, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your thoughts on all that? You know, especially the tire pressure stuff. Let's be real. I think it's a joke. Like we always say, it's an absolute joke.
It just can ruin a race so easily.
Okay, I know why the rule's there, and it's a safety thing for Michelin. Okay, they don't want to have a tire delaminate or puncture for bad reasons, and they don't want any bad publicity. They don't want anyone to get hurt, but they haven't had one.
So
it's a bit harsh, right? When the rule affects the racing, so if the rule didn't affect the racing so much, fine,
no one would care about it. It doesn't matter.
But when it affects, when such a small margin can make the difference between being first or eighth, that's wrong.
It's funny you say bad publicity though, because it's already bad publicity. Because Michelin and all of these, it doesn't make me want to buy Michelin. It's just because it annoys me that much.
Because you might put the wrong tire pressure in when you got to go to the cafe, right?
I need my own Michelin crew chief to do my tire pressures every morning.
But you're 100% right. When you say it like that, you think of it, people are going to go, well, hold on. Moto2's just switched to the Pirellis and they're shaving seconds off their time. Yep. I'll put that on my road bike.
Well, I know. And Michelin did that when they came in, right? They wanted to go and beat all of Bridgestone's lap records, and that was a big deal. But, yeah, is this working for them? I don't know.
I don't think it is.
I don't think it is. It's interesting. The Pirelli thing surprised me, though, just touching on that briefly. I didn't think they would go and beat all of the Dunlop lap records, but they are in both classes. They're really doing a great job. Yeah. It's been hard for some riders to adapt because the feeling is different.
Correct. Tony Arbolino is
a prime example.
Jake Dixon, early part of the season.
I
mean, that was a suspension and tire thing, but he's fast now. And if you can get your head around that, it's a different ride.
It'll be interesting to see if they want to go into MotoGP. I'm sure that's the goal for Pirelli.
100%. 100% is their goal. They got World Superbike. Yeah. They've got Formula One.
Yep.
Yeah, they'll have.
They've got Moto2, Moto3. Yeah,
it's just a tire kind of bred for racing, isn't it? Though, like that's
it is.
Yeah,
that's and clearly, like they go straight into Moto2, as you said, and just beat lap records.
I know, and that this will be their entry into the paddock, and it'll be what their target is. But at the end of the day, it's all commercial. Let's say so. Let's see which way it goes. But going back to that, no, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of the ride height devices. I'm not a fan of the aerodynamics, and I'm not a fan of that tire pressure rule. I'm not a fan of the – there's a lot of things. the green painted areas and the extra bitumen.
Yeah, 100%.
The yellow flag rule if someone's crashed in a session that your lap is –
Tom will love you for that one. He hates that rule.
There's lots of things that I'm not a fan of. I don't know what's right to make it all right. Like the aero stuff, how do you control that and how do you say no aero? Well, our bike comes out – you know, it's a difficult one. I don't pretend to know to write the rules, but they're not right at the moment.
Yeah, 100%. The aero ones seem to be everyone's biggest pet peeve right now.
Yeah, well, that affects the front tire. I think that's a big thing because of the disturbed air and how that affects – It's Formula One technology from 20 years ago, right?
Yep. That's right.
And that's not what motorbike racing is about. Motorbike racing should be about the racing. Formula One should be about the technology is my opinion.
100%.
And we want close racing.
And that's the thing. We always say we're not fussed about lap records.
No.
Couldn't care.
If the guys are doing 28s at Phillip Island or 32s, does it matter? No way. But if there's 50 passes in the front group or three, well, that's a boring Grand Prix or a great Grand Prix, isn't it? You know.
Or Moto3 is a prime example.
Yep.
Yep.
You know. Look at it. Yeah. Exactly.
It's normally the best race of the night if you watch an Australian Sunday night.
Yep.
When
I worked at Fox Sports doing the TV coverage, Moto3 audience was not that much less than MotoGP, and it was a lot more than Moto2 because people would tune in to watch good racing. Moto2, let's face it, for a lot of years was a bit of procession.
With those Honda engines.
So there was viewers would go down and then it would build up again because the Premier class, and we normally had an Aussie in there doing well. Yep. But people wanted to watch Moto3. Yep.
It's always 125s Moto3. It's always been
the best.
Exactly.
And 16, 17-year-olds who are fearless.
I know. And they don't care, do they? It's cool. That's good.
It's amazing watching the Colombian, what's his name?
David Alonso.
Mental bike. Like, yeah, he goes out and practice. He's something special. He goes out and practice sessions and he's half a second clear of everyone else.
Yep.
Like, when do you see that unless you're finding a... We normally say on this podcast...
You see that when Marc Marquez goes to Aragon, right?
Exactly right. Exactly right. We normally say, like, you know, once every 10 years, we unearth a gem. You know, a Marquez, a Rossi, a Pedro or David Alonso. Like, it always just seems to be one that comes through. And yep. I think he's the next one.
It seems like we're getting a lot of them though, right? Yeah. And they're all Spanish heritage. Seems like. Well, I know Argentinian, but yeah, it's
seems to be swinging that way again, doesn't it?
Very much so.
It's interesting. Like, you know, if you look at Guevara, Foggiao, those sort of guys that came up, there was really Guevara sort of showed that in dribs and drabs. But now, like, as we always say, it takes a couple of years in that Moto 2 category.
It does.
But they're still, like, Sergio Garcia is the only one from that Moto 3 class.
But he was special in Moto 3. He wasn't a David Alonso, but he was very good. He couldn't manage situation. He was as fast as an Alonso, but he didn't manage to get the wins the same way. But, yeah, he's showing his speed in Moto 2 now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the only one that seems to have grasped that jump.
Yep.
With the others are just struggling big time.
The last one was Raul Fernandez. Do you remember? So he came in, right, and he, as a rookie, and challenged Remy for that championship and was really strong. I'm not a fan of Raul because I'm more of a fan of Remy Gardner.
That's fair enough.
They had that. But and he hasn't really done what I expected more out of him in MotoGP. But that step, he came into Moto 3 and he was strong instantly. Moto 2, rookie year, and challenged and won a lot of races and really pushed Remy to the last round. But MotoGP's done nothing. Not much.
And he signed on again.
I know. I don't get it.
What do you think? There's obviously something that we can't see.
Spanish?
That's what we say.
Well, I don't know because Sergio Garcia, I think, is not going to get that second Pramac seat because he's Spanish, right?
Oh,
because
there you go.
Too many Spaniards. They don't want the field full. So I don't know. I don't know what the Raul Fernandez.
There must be something in the data.
And I don't think Davide Brivio or Trackhouse are the type of guys to keep a certain person on because of a nationality.
No.
So they obviously believe in him. There. There must be something there.
Especially Brivio. He's actually pretty ruthless when you think of it.
Very much so.
And he's just like
he just wants champions.
He wants champions and he knows how to build teams and make champions.
That's right.
Sure. Yep.
He's proven.
Yeah, it's true. Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting one.
So
I'm not too sure, but yeah, like you look at like Sergio Garcia, he just jumped up and he just manages the tires, he manages the bikes.
But he weighs about 45 kilos like Danny Pedrosa. Like he's a midget as well. Yeah.
It's talking about managing situations though. You look at David Alonso and if he's fourth in the pack, you know, he's coming through.
At the right time.
Yep.
There's guys that have that. I don't think that's something you can train. I think that's just something that's built in. Yeah, you know, you've got it or you're not. Yeah. Mark's pretty good at it.
Oh yeah.
Like the good guys are. Acosta's good at it, you know. Those sorts of guys, yeah.
Yeah, so. And it's always that's that little extra even 1% that separates the champions from best of the rest.
100%. 100%.
That's what gets them over the line ultimately.
Exactly. And And when they're characters, it's even better for us.
Oh,
right?
Man, it just makes it so much better.
It just makes the Valentino Rossi right there when you're ruthless and can play up to the crowd. Like, how much better does that get?
Yep, exactly. Well, yeah, he was the man, wasn't he? He was the man. So, yep.
We can go on a four-hour pod about how good he was.
Look, I've raced against him and I've beaten him on a very few occasions.
Yep.
And I've been Rossi, for me, Rossi wasn't the greatest rider, like as in pure talent.
Yeah.
You see him on track and you go, he's got more speed than me, but I can see where he's making that speed. Where someone like Casey or even Jorge at the time, you go, bloody hell, they're fast. Or Danny sometimes, not always. Pedrosa, you go, they've got speed, but I don't even know where I can't do that. So the Rossi thing. But he had the whole package.
Yeah.
He could manage the tyre well. He knew how to race and control a race. He worked with the engineers and sometimes he wasn't even fast all weekend. It wasn't him sandbagging. It was just them progressing and getting the thing out.
Yeah.
And he could start in the fourth row of the grid and win a race. He could start in pole and win a race. You know, like he just had this whole package and been able to manage situations. He was very good at getting everything out of the bike. Very, very talented, but not the most talented rider.
Yeah, naturally talented.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So a lot of people have actually said that though.
Have they? Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of people have said most naturally talented. I always hear personally is Casey or Mark.
I haven't ridden against Mark, but Casey for me was, look, he knew what he was doing, but man, what he could do at times on a motorcycle was just wow.
Mm. Yeah.
That's just like, Yeah. That's a God-given that, gift, that is.
Especially on the Ducati.
I know.
Well, I don't think that would have been. Yeah, I don't think that would have been the easiest bike to ride.
Well, Melandri was coming last every year, and he's Marco a very, Melandri, very capable, yeah. capable no, rider.
Easy, so I love Marco.
I really like Marco too, and we got on really well. And we're the same age. Yeah. He spent longer in MotoGP than me, but he was Italy's next great hope, right?
Yes, he was.
And the Ducati factory really wanted him. They thought he was going to be the next Rossi. And let's face it, he was second in the championship to Rossi once, very good on that Honda. But when he got to the – I don't know if I've told you guys before, but when he got to the Ducati, he said to them, whatever you're paying Casey, triple it because it'll be cheaper than making the bike work. So, you know, wow. I'm not going to get anything out of this like he can. So it doesn't work, and just pay him more because that's how you're going to win races.
That's incredible. That's insane.
Especially with him, you know, when you're in that paddock and have a mentality and turn around and go and say something like that.
Something like that. Yep.
Yeah, different ball game.
At least we got the power slide out of Marco Melandri, turn 12 Phillip Island, so I'm very happy about
that. I didn't get to see that in real life because I was in that Grand Prix, but so far I was second, but I was too far behind. True. I couldn't see it. Yeah, so, yeah, I was on the podium with Marco after that one, but, yeah, cool image, isn't it?
I think it's the coolest.
And I said... Were you worried about that? Because imagine if it went wrong, right?
Mm.
And he goes, I did it somewhere testing. It might have been Sepang earlier that year. And I knew I could do it. So, because I was like, man, like taking your hand off, because these things have got electronics. What's if the traction caught Kicks and in. Just threw him over the bars or what? You'd look, like a fool. Oh, man. So he goes, no, I'd done it somewhere and I knew it worked. So, yeah.
I think, was it Herf was telling us he was on a track day? Or was it you maybe? I think it might have been Herfoss. He was at a track day with Melandri and on his, was it his in lap?
Phillip Island.
Yeah. On his in lap, made him look silly and then did the same thing, drifted the bike into pit lane.
Yep, I've heard Troy told me the same thing. Yeah. He complained about me passing him too close down the straight. This is when he was first getting on a road race.
Turn it up, Troy.
He was riding the 600 or something. Apparently I come down the straight too close to him and scared the living daylights out of him. And, he told me Melandri did this big power slide and passed him and then into the pit lane. Yeah.
That's wild, man.
Yeah.
Imagine seeing that.
Look, compared to a 600 Supersport bike or a super bike, what he was on here in Oz and the MotoGP bikes, it's night and day difference. Yeah,
it would be.
Even though the lap time's not a lot, and this top speed might be 15, 20 Ks. It's the acceleration.
Yeah.
The braking. It's so much more. And it's so much more money and technology and everything. And when you're riding them, just to go that like 1 second faster, it's exponential. You know, as you go that much quicker, it's huge to make it go that much faster. So, yeah, they feel so different.
Yeah. It's just – are they stiffer motorcycles?
Oh, much more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminded me today, I was talking to Harrison Voigt, okay? He's racing in, I think they call it Junior World Championship now.
Yeah.
Because it's in Spain.
Yes,
right?
The CIV.
It sounds like an American thing, doesn't it? Yeah, the World Championship of that. It was the old CEV.
Yeah.
So it's called, CEV. It's a Moto2 Junior Moto2 World bike, Championship. Yep. Yep. So he's riding a Moto2 bike in that championship. They ride through the Italy, Portugal, Spain, France.
It's a good series.
It's a really good series. But he said riding that thing, it's a proper Grand Prix bike. And then he's riding a very good superbike here with the McMartin Ducati. But he said it's so soft. It just moves. And it's a street bike. So it's got a lot more flex. He said his Moto2 thing's got no electronics. And this has got a lot more electronics. But as a chassis point of view, and he goes, unless someone's actually ridden both, they don't understand how different the feel is. And it is like that. And I remember my first ever Grand Prix was at Phillip Island 2005. Here, I filled in for Troy Bayliss on the Camel Honda. And the thing was just night and day different to a CBR 1000 that I rode for Tenkata. I won my last race on it and then was runner-up in the championship and then come here and ride a factory MotoGP bike. It's just night and day, night and day. And that's when I knew I needed to get on one. But I still remember riding here, okay, down the straight, Superbike, we did, I don't know, numbers, but say 310, and the GP bike was maybe 320, 325. But the difference was the Superbike, you got on the straight and you just held it flat and went up gears and, it shook a little bit, whatever. Yeah. The MotoGP bike, when you crest the bridge, I had to get on the rear brake because it wanted to wheelie.
Oh.
Like at over 300K an hour, it still wanted to power wheelie. Like that's the difference. Like you're still like fighting.
Always on.
you're not sitting on your butt. Your feet are loaded into the foot pegs the whole way to stop wheel spin, to stop wheelie. Okay, electronics weren't as advanced as they are now and don't have the rotor devices, but they were machines. Yeah, they were animals. Yeah.
So would you say that it was more physical than a riding world superbike? Or
yeah.
Yep.
You know, the superbike was physical in that it was heavier. I don't know what the weight might have been, 10 or 12 kilos more.
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but in the scheme of riding when you're moving around.
And it was, we're talking a long time ago, right? 2004 or 5, I rode that Honda. It was wide.
Yeah, they're bigger bikes.
They're bigger bike, inline four. When I got on the Honda, it's a V5, so it's much narrower. But yeah, when you're going fast on a Grand Prix bike, the physicality is there because, again, you're entering the corner faster.
Yeah.
You've got less time on the straight. You're not sitting down.
Yeah, yeah, trying to keep it down more out of corners.
And then the G-force is braking because the carbon brakes stop so much more. So, yeah, it is more physical. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
What was one of the most physical tracks you've ridden on? Like, just from a spectator, it seems like something like for Sachsenring because you got less time on the straight, I guess.
Sachsenring was funny because you just go left, 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 straight, left, right, left, left.
Wave at Marquez as he laps you.
He was only in like 1-2-5 and I was still there. But Sachsenring was funny because it wasn't physical, but you do spend a lot of time on the side, so you could cramp up.
Yeah.
And I remember my right leg used to like get, was it right leg or left? But one of my legs would get shaky because you're so long.
Yeah,
on the side of the bike, that loading the foot peg, it was funny like that. But I think most physical depends on the weather too.
Mm.
Laguna, you don't get much of a break.
True.
Okay, it's not on the calendar anymore. And we raced there in 06 and it was over 40 degrees Celsius. It was 108 Fahrenheit or whatever Yanks use, you know. And the bitumen was melting off the side of the track. They cancelled the AMA Superbike race before ours because they were making too much of a groove in the bitumen.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, it was really, really hot. And I was on pole for that Grand Prix, my second pole, and I led most of it. And then the fuel
was
actually boiling in the fuel pump before it was making its way to the engine, so it was missing. But I was cooked. But that was heat. And it was that hot that I had blisters on my right leg because the exhaust come up near the foot peg. The foot peg was that hot that all the skin peeled off the bottom of my foot.
Oh,
like it's just she was pretty hard work. And Laguna, you don't get much of a rest either. There's no real straight. That kink through the like turn one there. It's not fast. It's 240, 250. But you enter, you put your knee on the ground, and then both wheels just leave the ground like. It's physical and the bike shakes and then hard on the brake.
I was going to say hard on the brake for the left.
Two and three and then back over the other side and sweat running down and flicking to the front of your visor. It's pretty hard work. I remember that one. That stands out. And Suzuka 8-hour.
I did
an 8-hour.
Yeah.
And it's stupidly hot and humid. But probably the hardest we worked was testing in Malaysia. So there was no testing ban when I raced. But we'd go to Sepang, do 3, 4, 5 days in a row. 80 to 100 laps a day, all on the pace. Like your slowest laps a second off what you can do because there's no point going any slower than that. And you work and it's 35 degrees and 95% humidity. And I look like a Smurf because we were this color, right? All our leathers. The dye would go into my skin.
No way.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. The dye would come out of the leathers and into my skin. Wasn't the only rider.
I have to try and dig up some photos from the testing days. Yeah.
Danny would have looked like an Oompa Loompa, right? Or that Repsol orange coming out.
And it would have been hitting too because he is this big.
So, yeah, it was, it's, the sweat would go through my leathers and it would be running on the outside of your suit at times.
What?
So hot because you come in the garage and you get even hotter.
Yeah.
There's fans, but the bikes are in there, it's hot and then make a change and then out again. Yeah.
So, oh, no way.
That was the hardest we worked physically. Testing. Yep.
What was your training like?
I did a lot of running.
Yeah.
A little bit of cycling. Bit of weight stuff, but didn't want to. I'm about as tall as a Grand Prix rider got.
Yeah.
And when I raced, I was sort of 67, 68 kilos. I'm like nearly 80 kilos now, so I was a bit thinner than I am. But so I do a lot of sort of plyometric stuff like push ups, lots of that sort of strength. and holding positions, because that's sort of what it's like on the bike, and then lots of running. So I'd be running 60 to 70 kilometers a week.
Yeah, wow.
Just getting Ks to keep the weight off and keep your cardio up, and then and a bit of cycling. But the running, just because it was easier to travel with a pair of shoes. Yeah. You're always on an aeroplane,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
So just run. The worst thing was if you were injured, you couldn't.
Yeah.
It's easier to ride a push bike, you know, to do some exercise. But and yeah, we get injured.
Yeah.
It's funny that, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, like you fall off the thing and you're sore.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes a bit of sense, doesn't it?
It does. It does on occasion. So yeah, and I've been on the podium at race weekends where you've had three or four crashes over a weekend, and you just don't even want to be on the podium because you just take me. I just want to go. You know,
sit down.
Yeah, just sore. So you know, rolling through a gravel trap at 150, 200 k's an hour, it does take its toll. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Don't want to. Trust me. You're not missing anything.
I don't think I want to know either.
Stick to MotoGP24 on PS5 and it'll be good.
It's funny. I don't miss any of that. Hey. You know, people say, do you miss riding at times? And I do. And I do miss riding the best motorbikes with the best mechanics on the best tracks in the world. But how the build up to get there, and then how focused and mentally you're looking at every hundredth of a second, right? And when you're struggling, or when you crash, or you're just looking for a few tenths of a second, you can never find it. That's really the real hard work.
Yeah.
And I don't miss hitting the ground, and you know, when it's not right, it's not fun.
That must be a lot mentally to hit the deck, come back to the pits, get back on and go.
I think because you're young and dumb, right?
Yeah.
You don't really worry about it. It's, I say that, I should correct you. If you know, if I knew why I crashed, I didn't worry about it.
Yeah.
Okay. If it's my mistake or the bike's mistake or a mechanic made a mistake, okay, I crashed because of that reason. If you didn't know why you crashed, well, then that's an issue. Right. That's hard to get my head around. Okay. Am I going to go in there and that's going to happen again? Or generally, if I knew why, you could work out
to not
do the same thing again, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was sometimes smart enough to do that.
Well, you saw Pedro Acosta's crash in FP1 or FP2 in Austria. He lost the front end. And then he was straight back in the box and back out again.
So they must have known what happened. That was man, that went early, huh?
Didn't it?
It was really early.
Upright.
So there's something not right with that.
Yeah.
That you shouldn't lock that, especially with carbon brakes. So carbon, when it loses temperature, so every time you go down the straight, the wind hits the carbon, the temperature drops, and carbon doesn't have an initial bite like a steel disc. So you can just grab the hell out of them because they don't bite. And as the temperature builds up, it gets to 400 or 500 degrees.
Yeah.
Then you get more and more braking performance. But it cools down to 200 degrees and you don't have any bite. So it's really strange that as he's grabbed the brake, that thing's just tucked from under him. There wasn't load on that tire for some reason. Yeah.
That's weird. There's been a little bit of that though this year at a few tracks where people have lost it straight away.
Straight away. Yeah. Yep. Not that early. I don't know.
No, that was extreme, very early. But
the guys are losing it. The brake pressure does build up, and of course the Brembo carbons are better than when I raced.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that went that early. Yeah.
Mm. We'll blame aero. Just blame
aero. Yeah, blame aero.
Yeah, 100%.
Ride height devising didn't disengage. It'll be something like that.
Is it next year ride height goes?
Yeah, I think it is.
I hope so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
it is. But look at Mark's race in Austria. The tire was leaking, or the valve stem was leaking, so they changed the wheel. Front tire wasn't as hot. So he's walking on trying to get temperature in a front tire, engages the ride height device, and there's a safety mechanism so it doesn't engage a second time, right? So he tries to
get it
for the grip. It can't, because they don't want it to happen when you brake for turn one, right? Yep. And it ruins his whole race. Like I really, he mightn't have, Pecco won it, right?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have caught Pecco in my opinion, but he would have probably caught Martin.
Yeah.
It's, it just sucks.
Have you found Marquez's year on the Ducati anyway?
I expected more.
Yeah. I remember you. Yeah, I remember you're huge on him.
But I think the GP23 has the 24 has a step over the 23. I don't think, and I think that's the Michelin tire from this year. So I think when Mark first tested it, there wasn't much of a step because they were running the old tires
correct.
At the Valencia test. And I think Ducati are developing the 24 bike. And that new Michelin tire pushes the front of the 23s because it's got more grip, where Ducati have developed the chassis of the 24 to allow the bike to turn with that extra grip. And I think Mark's doing, well, he's doing better than anyone else on a 23, right?
Yeah.
He's the only guy that can. And I think there's more of a step there, not electronically, but chassis-wise, than we understand. And it might only be less than a tenth of a second a lap, but you add that up over 20 laps of a Grand Prix,
that's
he's 2.5 seconds behind.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
And I think that's the difference. But he's the only guy that can manage to get it out of it at times.
Yeah.
I don't know when this is going to go to air, but this weekend's going to be interesting.
In it's going to be interesting. He's been quick all weekend again.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Let's yeah, there see. Might be some back angry Italians throwing rocks or something at him from
and
the
bounty. And do you think Mark would just love to win in Valentino's backyard?
Wouldn't he ever?
No? Tavulia's like 20, 30 k's on the race. No way.
Especially if he takes Pecco in a last corner or something like that.
Punts him. Imagine if he punts him off the
track. There's going to be a bit of booing, isn't there? There's going to be a bit of booing on that podium.
People will rate, like, they'll run the track.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be like doing a Crivier. Wouldn't be allowed out of the pits.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
That was the thing, wasn't it? He didn't come out of the pits after that.
Who, Mick?
Mick?
Yeah.
They wanted to kill him.
Mick wouldn't have cared, though.
No, 100%. No, he was loving it on the podium. He was like, yeah.
Loving it.
He's an animal.
Yes, exactly. No, good times, that. Good times.
Marquez feeds off the hate, though. Like, it spurs him on even more.
He's a strong character. Mm. I don't think it affects him. Like, right? He's got a massive following on a big chunk of the world.
Yep.
And let's face it, it all happened because of his fallout with Valentino.
Yeah.
So there's massive Valentino fans are just going to hate the Marquezes and vice versa. And it was all because of that fallout. And it's interesting.
It's good to, as obviously fans, it's the funniest. It's great.
100%. I think it's hilarious. I think it's really hilarious. What's going to happen next year, though? Pecco and Mark.
What are your thoughts on that, them choosing him? Do you think it was the right call?
They've chosen him for two reasons. There's a commercial advantage, obviously.
Yep.
But I don't think Gigi makes the decision, let's face it, over everyone. And I don't think he's that fast on the commercial decision. He's a technical
guy. He wants the best guy.
He wants the best guy. And I think he sees the data more than anyone else and probably knows what Mark's getting out of that motor, which makes me think that Mark's getting a lot out of that 23 bike.
And that's a base 23 bike too, remember. It's not
like Zarco's.
Yeah, it's not what Pecco and that finished on.
Yep. So it won one race, right? Phillip Island.
Yeah.
Mark's going to be fast here.
He's always quick here.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, there you go. That's interesting. I actually never looked at it that way, that they would have looked more into the data.
Yeah, Gigi makes the calls.
Yeah, of course.
Mostly like that. Yeah. So, what is it, Claudio Domenicali?
He's the director of sport. What is he?
No, he's the F1 guy. Is he director of sport?
No, he's a big dog of Ducati, isn't he?
Claudio. He signs off on it, but Gigi makes the decision. Yep.
Yeah.
Wait, there's Claudio and Stefano Domenicali.
That's
what
I was confused about then. That's what I was thinking. Stefano is F1.
Is F1.
That's right.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. It's too many Italian names.
Yeah.
There's too much going
exactly,
on.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yes.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it. And then...
So I think Mark... Yeah, that win at Aragon was good, but I expected it to come earlier, this season.
A lot of mistakes because, like, at Coda, he was leading.
Yep.
Probably should have won, could have won.
Yep.
And then crashed, obviously getting used to the bike. Then you had Saxon Ring. Got injured, had a massive off. People forget that as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So, look.
And it's not easy. Let's face it. I expect him to do more, but he's still third in the championship.
Yeah.
And
that's
those two guys at the front are on the best motorbikes, and they're not slow. Neither of them. But next year's going to be interesting, isn't it? Next year's going to be very.
Yeah, I can't pick it. Honestly, can't pick it. Like,
how that's going to unfold? Is there going to be a wall up down the garage? Is it going to be Lorenzo Rossi time again, or is it going to be harmonious? It's not going to be, is it? Because one of them is going to be beating the other one, and it's not going to go.
And they've
all
got massive egos. Pecco's a top dog at Ducati. Marquez strolls in and goes "F you" to everyone.
Does Mark want to cause chaos because he loves chaos?
I think
around him, you know. And Pecco doesn't like that.
Yeah,
he likes the calm.
Yeah.
So
it could be a very Dovi and Lorenzo style.
Mm.
How it was.
Yep.
At Ducati, which, that didn't end well for anyone.
Cheeseburger Lorenzo.
Yeah, well, cheesy.
Ducati got rid of Lorenzo too quick, didn't they?
Yeah, didn't they?
Silly move.
I know, yeah. It took him longer to get on with the thing, but when he got on with it, he's fast. Yeah.
Yeah, that cost him a championship.
Yeah, big time. Yep, 100%.
That set him back so far.
Yep.
Well, Cheeseburg ended up going onto that Honda and doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, but he was cool.
Who's done on anything on that
right.
Honda?
That's right. Anyone else that jumped on that bike did nothing after Danny left.
Yeah.
There was no other one that could ride the bike like Mark could.
It was just
and Danny's been criticised like never winning a championship. Why was he that good? But you talk to Casey and Casey said he's learnt the most of riding a motorcycle from anyone in the world off Danny Pedrosa.
There you go.
He rates him very, very highly.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of times Danny should have won the world championship, but things happen. And it happens to everyone, let's face it.
Yeah, like, that's right. You got to have a bit of luck on your side.
But yeah, for whatever reason, it didn't happen. Yeah, he's very fast on a motorcycle.
Honda stuffed up by letting him go.
100%.
Yeah, didn't they ever? Yep. They rested on their laurels too much, Honda, where KTM swooped in.
Yep.
Ducati just advanced everything. And Honda just...
And now,
typical Honda arrogance, seriously.
Honda have got Aleix Espargaró as a test rider. I like I get on well with Aleix. He's probably the last guy in there that I raced against. But bloody hell, man.
You've been riding his bike around a bit, haven't you?
An old one.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
2013 Aprilia MotoGP bike owned by a guy in Brisbane, Tom Dermody, Irish guy. It's got a cool collection of motorcycles. He's got four or five YZR 500s.
Oh, cool. Nice.
He's got some Suzuki 8-hour factory Hondas. He's got that Aprilia MotoGP bike. He's got some really old stuff, some RGBs.
Yeah, like, cool.
Late 70s, that sort of stuff. He's done well for himself and loves the motorcycles and loves going to events and having these bikes around. And
good on him.
Yeah, he gets me to ride that Aprilia occasionally. So it's my... reality check that I'm slow. You know, so. No, I have fun on it. It's good.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
It's a cool bike. Yep. Cool bike.
But you reckon wrong choice for Honda?
Yeah. I don't know. Look, Aleix brought a lot to Aprilia, but they need someone faster. That's my opinion.
Who would be the ideal candidate? You reckon?
Yeah.
Not Taka, that's for sure.
Nah. Taka's out. It's funny though that they. Yeah, I don't know. They might have used him in Japan to do some stuff. I don't know who the ideal candidate is.
It's hard. There's not really anyone out there when you think of it.
No.
Like, think of
but test Stefan riders. Bradl is not a good choice. So, Aleix is a step over Stefan.
100%.
But, yeah, maybe not many people around, right?
No, so there's not.
Like, it's hard. Even you see Cal Crutchlow, like, Cal's not there anymore.
But then you look at Michele Pirro. He's an amazing test rider and built this bike, but I wouldn't say he's a MotoGP elite. But he's still
10-time champion as well, just quietly.
In Italian championship. But he just won the Italian Superbike Championship again. And he turns up to a GP and he can run sort of top 15. He can score a point. Mm. He can score a point in World Superbike. So he's right. He's not someone you'd go, wow. But he obviously brings some good information. Mm. Yeah. So maybe Aleix will be that guy.
Well, at least he's going to bring a lot of technical
hopefully
data.
Hopefully I'll eat my words, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I hope so as well.
Because I want to see Honda back. Yeah. We want to see it more
absolutely
level
do.
Playing field.
I think there's rumours that Dovi wants to have a crack at the Yamaha one too.
Yeah, well, he's filling in or has filled in the Misano test where Cal had a shoulder or hand.
Yeah,
or
I think he's injured in some sort.
Some sort of way. Probably fell off his push bike. No, on Cal. He'll go and do a million miles a year on his pushy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hurt himself. Yeah. So
that's funny, man.
Yeah. So.
But I think that'll be a good step for Yamaha to get Dovi back out there.
If he's fast enough. I don't know.
He fell away a lot towards that. Those last 2 years?
He had half a year on that YNF.
Yeah.
The RNF.
That's it. With the Yamaha.
The Petronas thing. Yeah. And he didn't do much, did he?
Nothing.
But it's a very different motorcycle than the... It's almost the opposite of the Ducati that he came off.
Yeah.
Right? Where, how to get speed out of it, how to do a lap time. Very much a wrong choice, if you ask me, for him to be competitive on the Ducati, for them to think that he's going to go to Yamaha and take something there. So,
yeah.
Mm, yeah.
And he's been out of it for a while now when you think of it too.
Yep. Yep.
Things have changed so
quickly.
It does.
It changes really quickly. And you can lose half a second like that, you know, being out of it for a little while. And it's hard to find that. That's the hardest half a second to find, you know.
True.
It's going to be interesting. And Miguel on the Yamaha next year.
Yeah.
Fabio staying. That's the big one. But he obviously believes in the project going forward.
20 mil helps.
I was going to say, do you think he believes in the project or he believes in the pay packet?
I don't think he's that sort of guy.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think he's that sort of Like a leash, you go, yeah, he's taking the paycheck, man. He wants a few more supercars, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think he wants to win. I think he genuinely wants to win. And he knows, you know, stay with the devil you know, right? Like sort of thing.
Yeah, I suppose.
And top 10, he makes Q2 at Misano. So they've just done some testing here. They've brought some new parts.
That's right. And he's predominantly, like, typically been good at this track.
Yes. Yep. So, yeah, look, they're a while away, but he obviously believes in the way it's going. Money that's doesn't hurt either.
Well,
right. That's all right. It sets you up for life, doesn't it, really?
And he's still young enough.
Yeah. Yep. Like, that was Mark's thing, right? Because he said, I'm not
that's
young
right.
enough.
That's right, yeah.
Honda, he said, Honda will come back, but I don't have the time to wait for them to come back.
True.
You know, so.
Yeah. That's fair enough,
it's still
too.
A baller move going to, like, you know, a privateer Ducati and then putting your balls on the line, really.
Yeah. He loves it, doesn't he?
After a massive injury.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan, as you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, just back on the Yamaha with Miguel, though. Who do you think's going to take that second seat?
There's rumours of Jack, obviously,
yeah,
which
obviously we
hear. Yep. I heard Sergio Garcia, and like I said before, I heard there's too many Spaniards, so he's sort of a no-go. Who else?
Ian Ernie.
That's the talk,
isn't
it?
We're talking about in the back of the paddock today.
Yeah. Paolo Campagnotti, who owns Pramac and the team, he is a big fan of Iannone, and he's well connected with Iannone's manager. Mm.
Yeah, you were saying that earlier as well.
Yes. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. From Jack's point of view, I'd love to see Jack keep racing.
Yeah.
But is it the right thing for Jack Miller to be on a bike? Let's face it, that is not going to be – there's going to be a challenge to score points at every race. Is that how you want to finish your career and be remembered? I don't know, you know. I had options to get on – it was actually a Pramac Ducati, which wasn't very good at the time.
Yeah.
It was pretty average motorbike. And I thought, do I want to – could this be the end of my MotoGP career and be on a bike realistically that I'm going to struggle with? Or do I go – to World Superbike on a factory Kawasaki, and that's, you know, you make your decision. Because I thought I wanted to win races. I didn't want to just be a guy that's there just to be there.
Yeah, filling up grid spots.
And I hope, well, it'd be interesting to see what Jack goes. Yeah.
Yeah. If you were there, who would you pick? From a, let's move away from you might know Jack and be good with Jack, but you want to win and you want to develop the bike.
Who are you? Joe Roberts.
Wow, that's a left field answer.
I just think there's something about him.
I'm off him at the moment, but.
Are you?
Yeah, because of his stupid move on the weekend.
Oh, that was silly.
That was
wasn't
a bit silly.
Really silly. Really, he didn't need to do that.
No, like, not just, at all. He was going to pass him
just
in the
take
next
your time. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I know. So, no, I think there's something there with Joe. I think.
I like that.
The kid's got speed. He's American. We want an American in that championship.
Absolutely. Love an American in the championship.
I was shocked that Trackhouse didn't take him.
I thought it was a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
Thank you. I really, really thought that. So that's who I'd take. But he's resigned, hey, with American Racing.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So
I don't think anyone else from Moto2 is coming up.
No. So we've got Chantra and Aigura.
And Aigura, yeah. They're the only ones.
Fermin Aldeguer.
Fermin as well. Yeah, how quickly do you forget about him?
Well, that's it, isn't it?
I was going to say, what's your thoughts on him? He had a crazy crash and moves on at Aragon, but was a signing too early? We talk about it all the time. We think it is, but like it's interesting.
The world changed, and it changed in the period that I raced, where we would race, finish our season, especially in World Superbike, and not have a contract. And then you'd negotiate with the team, oh, yeah, I'm going to stay for next year. Yeah, cool. And so on. And then MotoGP, and as I progressed, it got earlier and earlier and earlier. And then there's guys signing before the season starts. Like, the big one for me was when Alex Marquez had not turned a wheel in MotoGP, and he was already getting pushed off the Repsol Honda team onto the LCR team.
Yeah.
Like, he hasn't even done a lap. Like, oh, he's done a couple of testing laps. But the kid hasn't even done a race and you're already firing him. In a way, you know, like...
That's so wild.
It's just wild, isn't it, how it works? So, yeah, no, that's... I think a transfer window or something. They need to do something
that'll be interesting.
That's cool.
You know, maybe in August or September or summer break or something.
Just have a full-on silly season.
I reckon it'd be cool.
That's
that would
great
be
idea.
Unreal. Imagine that.
It'd be hard to police because how do you know negotiations aren't going on?
Yeah, that's the
and
thing.
And all done. But it would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
So that would be.
Chibati would be at someone's door at 3 a.m. trying to do a secret signing.
Yeah, put the fake mustache in the mask. Yeah,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Oh, that'd be funny.
So. Yeah, well, that's interesting though, Joe Roberts. I like that.
Yeah. Look, I'd love to see Jack on it too, from an Aussie point of view. Yeah, but of course, yes. I put my points forward, you know.
Yeah.
What else has Jack got? Like, there's nothing in World Superbike either.
No, I know. Right? That's the thing. Like, so. Oh, I think there might be a Moto Corsa seat because I don't think Rinaldi's signing back on.
Okay.
From what I've read. Yep. He's got some options elsewhere too.
Man, he's another guy that sort of...
He's fallen away too.
And yeah, quickly, hey?
Yep. Yep, very quickly.
Yeah, it moves on real quick.
Mm, it does. It does.
Do you think, going back to Furman though, what's your predictions for next year for him? Because we've talked about this quickly a lot. Alonso Lopez had a really good end of year 2 years ago, yep. was it? We call it the Alonso Lopez effect. And then they sign him on. And then Furman Aldeguer has 5 good races at the end of the year. And Alonso Lopez that next year did nothing again.
Yep.
And then Furman Aldeguer has done the exact same thing and they've signed him. So then to go to MotoGP on a Ducati.
Grassini
Ducati. Yep. Like, is it just a few good flyaway races? But then you see Fabio Quartararo. He had a real good short stint.
Well, not even long. Like, what, he won one race?
Yeah. I think it was Barcelona.
Barcelona. Maybe? It was just the right timing.
And then, but that went the other way. And then he did really well, won a title.
And it's funny. Maybe he's going to do better because there's a lot of talk about Fermín Aldeguer is from the same town as Pedro Acosta, right? And they grew up together and they challenged each other through their whole careers. So they're saying, like, he was very good. And Quartararo is a bit like that, right? He came in. They lowered the age limit in Moto3 to get Fabio Quartararo in because he'd already twice junior world champion. And he's like, well, I want to go to the world championship, but he was too young. So he'd already won two Spanish championships, basically.
Yeah.
And so they lowered the age. And then he came in and he showed a bit of form in Moto3, but it never really transpired. Yeah. Then he got on a Moto2 bike and it was nothing. And it's like, oh, that was a lot of hype for nothing. That this kid was going to be great. Got on a MotoGP bike and you don't know. And they're different formulas. So if the tire doesn't suit the rider or the team you're with or... There's so many little variables that can make such a big difference. So it's hard to say, but I hope Fermín Aldeguer is good.
Yeah, definitely.
So. I think the hardest thing is there's so many good riders in that paddock now that you think you could have taken anyone else.
Mm.
Whereas I think maybe when Fabio and some of those other boys were coming, you knew Morbidelli was going to come up on his own.
Yep.
You know, Pecco was coming up with Miguel. There's only a handful here and there that are coming up. Like the last big influx from Moto2 was Marini, Bezzecchi and... Bastianini.
Yep.
When they came up, all three of them came up together.
Basically.
Yep. Was that the year after Pecco?
Martin.
I knew there was someone else. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's talking about Morbidelli though, what's happened? Like he's still nowhere on a Ducati.
I still put it down to that preseason accident though.
Yeah.
Like he's doing okay. He's had a couple decent little... I mean, the VR46 thing saved him for next year. Otherwise, 100%. He was going to be in the Superbike paddock.
100%. So I love it. I like Franco. Great character. Was far second in the world championship.
Yeah, people on that were quick
private Yamaha.
That Patronus Yamaha.
But that was the old Yamaha. You know when he went to the factory Yamaha, he went sort of 2 year step.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? And the bike was very, very different. So like completely different and he just could not
it just didn't suit.
And the Yamaha Fabio was the only guy that could get anything out of that Yamaha and Franco was like he just wasn't there, you know, and really frustrating and then backwards and then the knee injury and then like he's lost and he gets 24 Ducati and then you know that
falls up.
It's just I don't know. Is he ever going to come back? I'm not sure. Yeah, I'd love to see it
because I reckon he's cool. But I think I'm not ruling out a podium for this, at least these next two rounds.
You reckon?
Cool. 100%. He's got to get one.
You put him in my top five. Copped all the flack for that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Italian bias, they reckon.
Do they?
Yeah, the fans think.
The mafia, is it?
Yeah,
he's mafioso.
Yeah,
his
don't have my earring in. Yeah. My little chilly earring.
His grandfather's a part of it. Owns Lygon Street.
Can you get him to sort the weather out?
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, I think this is his best chance though for Franco.
Mm-hmm.
These next round. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's where he took. Did he take his first win there? In COVID years, was it there?
You're testing me now. I'm not sure.
Or maybe second one or something.
Yeah, it's one of them.
Did he? Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, yep. He won there because it was almost a VR46 luck out of the podium. It was Franco, Pecco,
that's
and
good.
Yep.
Valet.
Mia pipped Rossi.
Yep.
On the last lap with I think two or three corners to go.
Mm. But he didn't get out of that place very easy.
Who's Mia?
Yeah.
I don't think he was lucky there was no one there. That's why he probably did it. He's like, oh, no crowds. I can make the move on the doctor.
Yeah, exactly. That's all right.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely wild though.
Yeah. It is funny. I've had experience like that with Rossi. I was talking about it with someone today. There's Valencia 2006 when Troy Bayliss won the race.
Yep.
And Rossi and Nicky Hayden are fighting for the championship. Valentino's leading by a few points last round. And he's in front of me in the race. And he's slow. And it's very, very rare that you go, Jesus, I've got more pace than Valet. I'm like, what's he doing sort of thing? And I was thinking, I've got to make a move on him soon. And it's hard to pass. And I'm thinking, shit, if I knock him off, I'll never be able to leave this place, right? Can you imagine knocking Valentino Rossi off and he loses the championship? And then he tucks the front in front of me.
Did it to himself.
In turn two. And I was like, oh, that's a pretty big move. But yeah, he struggled. But yeah, it's funny. It was going through my mind there, you know, because we're in seventh and eighth place or something. Like, it's not going to be for a podium. But yeah, it's
that was wild. When I remember that.
Yeah.
Coming into this championship, obviously, it's probably Martin Pecco by the looks of it.
Mm-hmm.
Who's your money on going in?
I don't know. Yeah. It's that close. It's really tight. I'm going to go Pecco.
Yeah.
Because he's on the factory bike.
Chibati's going to play with his tire sensors or
something.
Yeah,
I think I just think it's more important for the factory to not be beaten by the private team.
Yeah.
But saying that, if he makes one more big mistake, like what he did in Aragon, like that's just done. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, not that it was completely his fault. I'm not going one side or the other. I think it was a bit of a racing incident, but it could have been avoided by either rider.
Both parties.
So if he just hung out there a little bit longer, he was going to pass Alex Marquez before the end of the race. It wasn't the last lap.
Correct. You know, same as Joe Roberts.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly. So big mistake on his part from the championship. So if he makes another big mistake like that, it's going to be hard to catch Martin because what he's been second in nearly every race.
He's like changed from last year.
Hasn't he?
You know, because I think we spoke last time after, was it Qatar? When he had the tyre failure and he was shaking. Because I think I was asking you about... Remember how he was like shaking his head and he ruined his race?
Yeah, 100%, and got in his head.
How quickly is he? Like, he's done so great to change.
He's the opposite guy, isn't he? He's like, I'll manage this. I'm not going to go out. Because last year he was the fastest guy.
Yeah, and he'd just try and
go. But he made too many issues or got inside his own head. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he deals with that this year.
And Ducati won't want that number one plate going to Aprilia.
God, no.
Oh, 100%. I hadn't even thought of that situation. Yeah.
Imagine that.
And conspiracy theory, hey?
That's what we do on this podcast.
Do you? Okay.
That's what we talk about, conspiracies.
Very good.
Chris, thanks so much for coming on. We're going to take you to a dinner.
Yes.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah,
thanks again.
I'm actually working down here, much like in Australia. So got to go and do my official bit soon. So.
Shout out. It's been an absolute pleasure. I love picking your brain about MotoGP and your career as well. And, the listeners love it. We love
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. No doubt. We'll do it for a third time.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. It's good to see you guys. And, I'll be back here at Phillip Island for MotoGP.
Perfect.
We'll I'm working for Channel 10. So
Oh, beautiful.
It's free to air as well. So it's good.
Oh,
that's
good. That's great for the
Yeah, that we get it out there as well. And, can't wait.
Nah, it's going to be awesome.
Good on you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Cheers.
Bye.